Howdy and welcome to Thin Air News with an Altitude from Small Town Public Radio in the Rockies and Four Corners. I'm John Kovash.
I'm Jennifer Thurston. Howdy. This month we hear about a newspaper war in Crested Butte.
The Crested Butte Chronicle and Pilot has historically been somewhat left-leaning.
Also, the Durango narrow-gauge train is pollution historic.
I think it's the scenery that's most important.
The music of the String Cheese incident is transformed by a Telluride disc jockey.
When disco died out in the 70s, there were still people that wanted to dance nonstop.
We hear from the Map King of Moab.
A lot of these kids come into town with a $20 bill and a dirty t-shirt, and they don't change either of them.
But first, a mosey around Thin Air country. Reduce air pollution. Many mountain towns have embraced magnesium chloride over sand for winter de-icing of streets and highways. The town of Basalt gave up using mag chloride 2 years ago, citing environmental and health concerns. Now Aspen is following suit and will use the much more expensive CMAC, which is biodegradable. A report on alternatives to mag chloride commissioned by the Colorado Association of Ski Towns is due out in February. It will include interviews with those who handle the de-icing agents.
In Steamboat Springs, an emergency 3-month building moratorium has ended, but construction is still on pace to match last year. Steamboat hired new planners and is considering large increases in permit fees. Since the moratorium, 13 development proposals have been filed. Planners say the proposals were rushed in to beat the deadline for Colorado Amendment 24, which seeks to limit growth.
Park City, Utah is considering a controversial new project. The Promontory, a 6,500-acre golf course and second home community, is being proposed by Arizona developers. Some residents say the golf course would be too pricey for locals. Other concerns, water and sewer impacts. The company says under the parcel are aquifers waiting to be tapped, and treated sewage would be spread on the fairways. The project would offer monitored public use. Hikers would have to check in to use trails through the property.
Back in May, we reported on a little-known law that allows for Colorado citizens to be busted for speech crimes. In Telluride, one resident was arrested and jailed for displaying a banner, another for alleged criminal speech on the internet. Now the Boulder DA is making the same charge, the charge of criminal libel, against a newspaper, the Boulder Daily Camera. It's all related to a complaint by a witness in the JonBenet murder case. Camera publisher Colleen Conant said she's been in the news business for 30 years and never heard of the law. The Colorado ACLU says the criminal libel statute should be overturned, as it has been in other states.
Utah has for the first time applied its criminal libel law to the internet. Ian Lake, a Milford City High School junior, was held in juvenile detention for 7 nights, then sent to relatives in California. Sheriffs shut down his website and seized his computer, which was analyzed in the state crime lab. Ian's internet speech crime? He referred to several female classmates as sluts. He called a school official the town drunk, and he questioned the work ethic and competency of school faculty. The 16-year-old is being defended by the Utah ACLU, which says the law is unconstitutional on its face. Utah's ACLU is arguing that internet speech has the same protection as any other kind of speech.
In Albuquerque, a New Mexico company has been indicted by a grand jury for violating federal laws on storage of hazardous materials. It's alleged that flammable and corrosive waste from local body shops, construction companies, schools, and government agencies were stored without EPA permits.
The city of Aspen is closing loopholes that allowed downtown restaurant owners to use dumpsters that bears can get into. The city was prodded by resident George Detko, who objected to the use of beanbag ammo to shoo bears away from the dumpsters. Brian Flynn, Aspen's environmental ranger, defended the beanbag bullets, saying they have been proven in places like Yosemite for negative reinforcement.
In Glenwood Springs, Asistencia para Latinos, the Aspen Valley's prime advocate for Latino residents, closed its doors for a time last month. The entire staff has resigned in a dispute with the nonprofit's governing board. Asistencia has a $200,000 annual budget, assists about 4,000 residents each year, and organizes the annual Latino Festival, which last year drew 6,000 people. Board members vow the doors will again remain open.
Last month, the University of California won a contract extension to operate the embattled Los Alamos National Laboratory, but UC will be under new requirements to use subcontractor experts to improve security and project management, as well as health and safety, community and employee relations, and other non-science areas. The city of Santa Fe's pristine 18,000-acre watershed has been closed to the public since 1932. Normally, it would be contributing 20 million gallons of water a day to city reservoirs in the fall season. This year, that flow is down to 100,000 gallons a day. Down to 20% of capacity, the reservoirs are developing a deep green algae bloom. Officials say it's an aesthetic issue and there is no health threat from the algae. Since 1997, the Roaring Fork Valley Rail Project has spent $1 million of federal funds studying its rail corridor. Now another million has been awarded. Project officials say by September of 2001, they will have preliminary designs for commuter rail.
For many years, Durango's number one tourist attraction has involved the burning of coal, lots of it. Has the time come to end this historic but air-fouling practice? Sean Ferguson reports from KDUR in Durango.
Durango, Colorado was built around the coal-fired steam locomotive. Durango was founded in 1879 by the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad. Service to Silverton began when the track was finished in July of 1882. Here in the year 2000, the Durango-Silverton Narrow Gauge Railroad continues to operate early 1920s vintage locomotives, carrying passengers north on a scenic ride through the majestic San Juan Mountains. Josh Cunningham is a resident of Whispering Pines apartment complex 13 miles north of Durango. Cunningham and his roommate Brady Lynch feel that 118 years of coal-powered locomotion is enough. They have held up a sign that read, F pollution by tourism for every train that passed their apartment.
We were just a little annoyed and frustrated with the train, as a lot of people are in the town. And we decided to make the sign. We hold it up on our balcony every time the train comes by. Our first mistake was putting obscenities on the sign because they were able to send the sheriff out to our house and warn us. But we changed the sign. It says, "Isn't the black smoke beautiful?"
When asked about this situation, Christy Cohen, Vice President of Sales and Marketing for the Durango and Silverton Narrow Gauge Railroad, would only comment that, quote, "guests were offended." After changing the sign, Cunningham and other Whispering Pines residents were in return subjected to obscenities from conductors on the train. Justin Shees and his 18-month-old daughter were witnesses to this on Sunday, September 17th.
I look up, my daughter's waving at the train, and the conductor's sitting there flipping me off, you know, and I just, you know, I mean, how am I supposed to react to this guy driving by on a train flipping me and my 16-month-old daughter off?
Cunningham, in his interest to learn more about the train, was able to get some technical information from Vice President of Operations Steve Jackson.
They burn 5 tons of coal per trip. That's to Silverton and back just for one trip. And in the height of the tourist season, they could run up to 4 trains, at least sometimes 5 or 6, just depending on how many they have. So that could be at least 20 tons of coal a day. Not only that, they have to run it overnight just to keep it warm for the next morning and everything. That's mainly what causes all the junk downtown and the south end of town.
In 1996, the Air Quality Advisory Council was formed with the help of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment's Air Pollution Control Division, with funding from the Environmental Protection Agency, to test the amount of pollutants in the air around Durango. Nathan Ballinger, a Fort Lewis College student and chair of the Fort Lewis College Environmental Center Board of Directors, served as an air quality consultant to the advisory council.
We live in a valley which creates an area for inversion. Inversion is basically when there's a layer of hot air and cold air that come to a wall and they hold down all the pollution in the area when there's no wind. And so anything that's contributing to pollution is going to be more dangerous in an area that has a high inversion factor.
Cunningham asked Steve Jackson if the train would help minimize pollution.
He said no because of historical authenticity.
So is saving historical authenticity worth the continued pollution? Would people still be interested in riding the train if it reduced its coal-burning practices? I went down to the train station to ask some of its future passengers these questions.
Say the train was to change to an electric locomotive system or something that was significantly less coal-burning.
Uh-huh.
Would that ruin the historical value for you?
No, not for me. Okay. Wouldn't make any difference.
Would it for you?
Still goes up the mountain.
I don't think so.
I don't believe that that would ruin the, you know, the business or the excitement of it. I think it's the scenery that's most important, you know, because it is, that's a lot of polluting in the air.
No, I don't think so. I think it's more the trip through the canyons and that sort of thing, the sightseeing that's most important. As long as it retained the aesthetic, it would be fine.
Probably, yeah. Although I think I would like it better without the ash and smoke and stuff. But I think it would detract from the historic value. I think the scenery is the main thing, though.
If the locomotive was electric, yes, or a significantly less coal-burning, would that ruin the historical value for you?
I think so, yes, because this is one of the last things of the Old West.
Do you know that the train during its peak season burns 20 to 30 tons of coal between the four trains a day?
That is the other side of the medal. That is the question of today. What do we take care for, the nature or our fun?
Reporting from Durango, Colorado for Thin Air, I'm Sean Ferguson.
Meanwhile, a Durango Foundation has plans for a new narrow-gauge route along the Rio Grande from South Fork to Creed. Most residents of Creed have been opposed, while people in South Fork are saying they would welcome more tourists and business.
What happens when a small town newspaper gets taken over by a big media chain? In Crested Butte, the staff revolts and forms its own newspaper. Tony Todd reports from KBUT.
A few weeks ago, five members of the Crested Butte Chronicle and Pilot staff defected from the paper en masse. With them, they took several full and part-time writers. The five have since formed a partnership as owners of a new paper in town, the Crested Butte News.
You know, I can't speak for everybody, but I know for myself, I thought it would be really good to have a locally owned newspaper here.
Edward Stern is the editor for the Crested Butte News. He says that he and his colleagues made the move in response to the community's desire for a locally owned and operated paper.
I mean, you can only hear it so many times. A lot of people kept saying it to me. You know, just coming up, you guys should do this, mm-hmm. or someone should do this.
He, along with Melissa Ruck, Than Acuff, Tiffany Wardman, and Jill Hickey, had all worked for the Chronicle and Pilot for some time. They say they have embarked upon this new venture to put the heart and soul back into community news. Ruck is their associate editor.
Being locally owned is really important here. People don't move here to go to McDonald's, you know.
The new owners tout their entrenchment in the community as a strong reason why they feel they can tell the stories important to the residents of Crested Butte. Than Acuff is co-owner and writer for the Crested Butte News.
They're not part of the community, and I think that that is where you can draw a distinct difference between someone from out of town or out of state, a corporation covering the news, and a local company.
Many would argue that it's difficult to cover stories objectively when the people a reporter is writing about are his friends and neighbors. Stern says this just adds to the challenge he and his cohorts face as journalists.
You're going to have to see that person at the post office, or, you know, you're going to see him out on the street or at a party or at a restaurant, and you have to be able to look them in the face and say, I believe in what I wrote.
Rocky Hayes is publisher and editor pro tem for the Chronicle and Pilot. He says that the paper has become known over the years for its one-sided news coverage and commentary. And since the group that left was largely responsible for his paper's content, he sees their exodus as an opportunity.
For us,
What I hope we're able to do is really grow into a new place that provides a new level of balance and fairness. The Crested Butte Chronicle and Pilot has historically been somewhat left-leaning, and that is not something that we're comfortable at this point continuing with. Right now, we have in fact recruited a managing editor out of New Mexico who has 20 years experience in community journalism, and together with him, we're going to build a team of staff writers and a photographer. It's my intention that the Chronicle and Pilot will be able to cover those issues in a balanced and thorough fashion.
Colorado Consolidated Media Corporation purchased the Chronicle and Pilot from DP News Service in May of 1999. The paper has changed ownership numerous times throughout its history between corporations and individuals, locals and out-of-towners. Consolidated Media owns 4 small-town papers in Colorado, including the Telluride Daily Planet, the Gunnison Country Times, and the Norwood Post. It is a subsidiary of American Consolidated Media, which owns 30 small papers nationwide.
If the same properties were owned by just a mom-and-a-pop shop kind of operation, they would really, really struggle.
Hayes represents his company's ownership of the Chronicle.